The following tone is a reference tone, recorded at our operating level.
Everybody, and welcome back to Squat Cobbler number 11. We're back on the Alice Cooper show. I'm Kelly Toole at K-E-L-L-Y-T-H-U-L on Twitter.
And I am Mike. You can find me at Official Pagan on just about everything except Snapchat. Well, I am on Snapchat. I just don't know how to use it.
Previously on Squat Cobbler, it was established that Mike and Kelly hate Snapchat, don't understand it. Mike has a very interesting user experience in terms of what people are willing to share with him. I just don't get it. I think it's stupid. Mike thinks it's stupid. So we put out a call to the internet, and some hippie libertarian, just so you know, Mike, just so you know what we're going to be getting ourselves into, this hippie libertarian is going to come on, Mr. Bennett, and he will be telling us why we are wrong and try and convince us that Snapchat is not stupid. And he put his hand up pretty quick. I put that charge out on the tweet. And within 5 minutes, Bennett had said, I'm on this.
Well, you know what? I'm looking forward to being proven wrong, although I don't think we will be.
I doubt it. I think we will continue to think it's stupid. But I do not enter with an open mind. It's stupid. But
right. We're totally open-minded about this stupid, stupid thing that we won't use.
It'll be fun, and I have to prep Bennett for all the joy that it'll be when he goes through. But I know him, and he's up to it. He'll be a good match for us. It'll be a fun show. And that'll be coming up here in a few shows. But this show, we're back with Alice. We're on now his fourth album.
The album, or second, if you count the real Alice Cooper albums.
Yeah, take the prequels away. The second of the real Alice Cooper albums, again with Bob Ezrin. And it's killer. Several firsts in this album. One of the firsts is this first time we see a snake. It's on the cover. It's on the back cover. It's actually featured in the liner notes. That gets a shout out. Trivia question: do you know the name of the Alice Cooper band's first snake, Mike?
No, I do not.
Kachina.
Kachina?
Kachina. K A C H I N A. Kachina was the first snake, and if I recall, it met an untimely demise at some point, crawling into an air conditioner or something like that. But we get to see the snake, which is a staple of Alice concerts from here on out.
Now, let me ask you something. You're a father, right?
Correct.
Daughters?
Two.
How is neither of them named Kachina?
Well, Darth Vader was the original pitch, and then I was not allowed to offer anymore at
that
point.
That was like a permanent vetoing of you and names?
Once it was established that this is kind of where I would take the whole naming path, I was asked to excuse myself from all further input. And so
you were recused from...
Yes, it's like I was disqualified. But Kachina would have been pretty cool.
Kachina would have been a great name. And it's funny because now that we're kind of touching on that, I remember Christian, and he may have mentioned this on Social Sins, he has said before that he thinks a good girl's name would be Cyanide. So maybe he shouldn't be allowed to name kids either. I'm not sure, because I think it's a great name too, so I think we're all in the same boat there.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty strong name. I had wanted... there been a male heir in the mix. Power. Power was going to be the name, because then it's Power Tool.
That is amazing.
I'm pretty sure that individual had been playing as a running back for Alabama. I don't know how they could not with that name, but it didn't happen.
It's a shame.
That there could be a Power Tool walking around. That would be so, so cool.
I want to live in that world.
Yeah, and you're not
going to... someone named Power Tool.
Yeah, and you're not going to get people screwing up going like, oh, so your name's Power Thull? It's like, no, they're going to say, oh, your name must be Power Tool. But we digress. So
we got off on a slight tangent there.
Just a bit. But we're here to talk about Alice Cooper, Killer, Under My Wheels is the first song. This is 8 songs on this album, which is, I think, about the smallest number of songs in any Alice album. I think he tends to hit around 10, but... this is a pretty strong outing with several songs that people are pretty familiar with. And so it starts off with Under My Wheels, The Telephone Ringing, written by Michael Bruce and Dennis Dunaway and Bob Ezrin. So there's some interesting songwriting credits on this album. There's a couple times when Bruce and Dunaway and Ezrin team up, or Bruce and Dunaway. And I had going into this, and we established on a previous show that sometimes my Alice nostalgia is a little bit off, so I've had to re-up my game on that. I had thought Under My Wheels was solely a Michael Bruce composition, but it's actually Bruce, Dunaway, and Ezrin. Pretty great live. What do you? I like this song. I like it a lot. It's not my favorite on the album. There's a couple really good candidates here for that. What do you think about Under My Wheels, Mike?
Not my favorite on the album. Overall, a favorite of mine of the Alice Cooper group. So I have a couple little things with this. I don't know if you're aware, but there is a version of this song with Guns N' Roses.
I am familiar.
Okay. And that was originally released on the Decline of Western Civilization 2, the Metal Years soundtrack, which I'm a huge fan. I don't know if you ever saw that documentary. It's incredible.
I'm aware, and I've seen probably bits and pieces, but I've not been through the whole thing.
It's excellent. It is entirely worth the cost of admission, whatever that might be, just to see an interview, just to get a little off Alice for a second, just to see an interview with the then guitar player Chris Holmes of Wasp, where he is drunk and wading around in a pool while his mom sits on a lounge chair next to the pool. Just sort of watching him giving this slurring, drunken interview in the pool. It's so bizarre and weird. It makes the rest of the movie is excellent as well, but that scene alone makes it worth watching.
Sold me. I'll have to check that out. So what is mom, is she rooting them on? Is she napping? Is she hitting the sauce? What's going on, mom?
From what I can recall, and I haven't seen the movie in a while, but from what I can recall, she's just sort of observing what's happening. Not really getting involved or anything like that. But it's just a really bizarre, almost like Spinal Tap-ish funny scene, but then has this sort of dark undertone where you realize, like, this is real. This isn't Spinal Tap. Like, this is a real guy.
Well, I'll just have to check that out. Very, very cool.
It's an excellent movie. There's some good Alice interview clips in there. And, of course, Under My Wheels with Guns N' Roses.
And we both established we like this song. Not our favorite on there, but it's a good song. But upon further reflection, I kind of like to break this song down a little bit because I think while he's Ella, and there's a couple great moments on this album where Alice exercises his lyrical capability in terms of some pretty clever stuff. But ultimately, if you look at the storyline Under My Wheels, it's a tad confusing because it starts off with telephone is ringing, which puts him on the run. So I'm not really sure how the telephone ringing puts him on the run, but he's driving in his car now, anticipating fun. So I'm not sure how, because this is pre-cell phone.
Right.
And then, so I'm a little, the start off sounds awesome. It's great lyrics. It's really fun, but I just, the actual sequencing I have some trouble with.
So I have two quick things I would say about those lyrics then. My interpretation of that was always like getting a call from someone, then running out to go wherever you were called to.
Excellent.
That was kind of always my interpretation. But since we both love Alice so much, if you want, we can just say that Alice knew cell phones were coming because obviously he's a genius who can see into the future.
No, you have fixed that for me. I'm good with that. Can't believe I missed that. Makes perfect sense. I have no issues with the sequencing now, so I'm good there. You'll square me away on this next one. He called me on the telephone, said, take me to the show. I'll call back to the telephone is ringing at the beginning.
Right.
But then he says he can't go because old lady's sick and I can't leave her home. So is this a infidelity on Alice's part?
It could be, but I mean, you don't know who's calling him though, right?
True. And so this maybe come back to go full circle here. It might be his mom. The old lady might be his mom who's homesick. He doesn't want to leave her. Or maybe his mom's called him and he's very excited to go see her.
It could be that his mom's sick. What I think is interesting, and I think sometimes with lyrics that are maybe a little bit more vague or leave a little bit more to interpretation, it kind of becomes like a Rorschach test of the listener. Like, it's interesting because my initial interpretation of that would also be an infidelity situation. So it's interesting that we both took it that way first before we thought it's his mom or, you know, what, or it's just a friend who's calling him up or whatever the situation might be. We both initially jumped to infidelity. So does that say more about us or about the character in the song?
I think about the character in the song because he's put somebody under his wheels. Come on. So we've got to be better than that, right?
Right, right.
All right, so awesome, great, really good start to the album, fun. Then Be My Lover.
Well, before we jump into Be My Lover, I just had other quick thing about Under My Wheels. It's just a weird, fun thing I remembered. I was once asked to play with an Alice Cooper tribute band that was called Under My Wheels.
And you declined?
Correct. I don't like tribute bands. The idea of tribute bands is really odd to me.
I think on occasion, you can get bands that will do a tribute. So Proto Men, and this was on a past Nurture and Support, they're a pretty fun group. And they did a night of Queen, where they just basically did a big chunk of the catalog and were outstanding. I mean, and Freddie Mercury's not an easy guy to pull off. The guy did a very reasonable job. But that's...
That's a different situation because they're still a standalone band most of the time, correct?
Yep, absolutely. Yeah,
and that's what's weird to me. Like, I get cover bands, sort of. I don't like cover bands, but I get the idea of it being like a live jukebox kind of thing for a bar. And I get doing cover songs, but to try and emulate in every sense their catalog, their look, their movements, everything of one particular other band, to me is really strange. I don't understand that.
Yeah, and can end badly a lot of times. Just
yeah, and it hardly ever looks good. This is really funny. Last summer, I was at our place in Cape May, and we stopped in some bar just to get a random drink while we were waiting for somebody. And they had a list of like all the bands who were going to come up in that bar, and it was all tribute bands. But what was interesting was the cover price varied depending on the night and how popular the tribute band was. So like there was a Who tribute band that I'm going to say was like $10. And then there was a Beatles tribute band that was like $12. And then there was like a Guns N' Roses tribute band that might have been $15 or something like that. So depending on their popularity. And I was going down the list and somewhere as low as like $5 to get in. And then we got to the Foghat tribute band, which was like $35. And I was like, how? All right. I'm not saying this to shit on Foghat in any way. Like, I'm not a fan. But I have nothing against Foghat, but I'm looking at this thinking, how is the Foghat tribute band $35? So I called the bartender over and I asked him, he goes, no, that one's not a tribute band, that's Foghat.
Yeah, because I was going to say, $35, I'm not even sure I spent $35 for Foghat.
Right. And that was the other thing, I was like, Foghat's playing, I was like, no offense to your bar, but like Foghat's playing a corner bar with tribute bands? He's like, yeah, it's just the drummer who owns the name now. He's like, but that's why it's $35.
They were there and then they weren't. Old Foghat. Good name.
Yeah, it's a cool name. I never really got into them.
Not a fan either.
Yeah. Nothing against them. Like, I don't hate them. I'm not going to like throw something at the radio if it comes on to get it to stop. But I would never willingly put it on though either.
Yep, yeah. I don't own any Foghat material. And if I did, I wouldn't put it on. So. Okay, on to the next song, which is Be My Lover. Where are you at on Be My Lover? This is an awkward sentence. Mike, where are you at on Be My Lover?
Well, Kelly, if I was your lover...
No one wins.
All right, I re-listened to the album a couple of days ago, and correct me if I'm wrong, but this is the song where they do this sort of almost Beach Boys-esque harmonies in parts of it?
Yes.
Okay. Ish. I had forgotten about this song, I guess, or at least forgotten about the sort of Beach Boys-ish parts to it. And it's funny because I really like this album overall, but I had literally, right before I listened to this, just got done like a 15-minute tirade about how fucking terrible U2 is as a band. And one of the examples that I used was on their last album that they forced every iPhone and Apple user to download. There is a Beach Boys like tribute song on there. It's not a cover. It's a song that's intentionally done in their style as a tribute to them. And it is atrocious. Like, it is the worst thing ever that anybody's ever done. It just sounds terrible. It's embarrassingly bad when you listen to it. And I'm not a U2 fan to begin with. If I was a U2 fan, I wouldn't be anymore after I heard that song. So I kind of just got done like ripping U2 apart to someone because of that song. And I'd completely forgotten that there was something similar on an Alice record. So I don't hate it the way that I hated the U2 thing. And it, obviously they're coming from a very different place than U2 was with it. It's just not my favorite thing. And I kind of wish they didn't do the harmony part because I don't think it works that well.
Yeah. I, up until, So, I mean, the harmonies in Poison, when we get all the way out there, that's pretty awesome rock and roll harmony in Poison. But by and large, you wouldn't assume. So you definitely wouldn't assume YouTube's stock and trade should be Beach Boy-esque harmonies, nor the Alice Cooper Band, because particularly right. with Alice, Alice's delivery doesn't lend itself well to that. But it's, I hear you, it's there on moments, but there's also kind of that nice storyline going through there, and tempting to redeem myself on self-referential Alice Cooper mentions. Incorrectly told everybody last time there was something on Love It to Death. There wasn't. But on this album, we get two. And this is the first one where this is written by Michael Bruce. It's kind of written in his point of view, and so he happens to come up to a young lady in a bar, gives her a magnifying glass glance to just kind of look her over, and she asked me why the singer's name was Alice, is the lyric. And he says, "Listen, baby, you just wouldn't understand." And then they go into some Beach Boy-esque harmonies. So,
as you totally expect them to do.
Yeah. No, I think it's a very solid song. It's fun, good storyline to it. It's surrounded by better things.
Yeah, it is not a bad song. This is not at all like that atrocious U2 train wreck. It's just not on par with the other stuff on the record. And I don't like the harmony part. It just doesn't work well for them.
No, I would never have thought it would. Not you two.
No, yeah.
Okay, I don't have anything else on people. Although this is typically the song where Kachina and Kachina's successors would come out, is that Alice would come out draped in the snake for Be My Lover. So now we move on to Halo of Flies, which, so last week, or last Alice show, rather, we all heard that unequivocally, Love It to Death is Mike's favorite Alice Cooper album.
Yes.
I will now say, unequivocally, Halo of Flies is my favorite Alice Cooper song.
It's an excellent choice.
Tremendous amount of stuff going on this song. Let's do the Mike Blinsky. So he's kind of like Rain Man. You can drop a bunch of toothpicks on the floor and he can tell you how many there are just by looking at them. He's that way also with song length. So if you were going to ballpark Halo of Flies,
I'm going to put it like 8.5 minutes.
8 minutes and 21 seconds. The man is a miracle. He's amazing. Very impressive. It's an outstanding song. And then it never took off. It's a tremendous live song. I want to talk about that in a second, but it wasn't a hit. Under My Wheels got a lot of radio time. Be My Lover got a lot of radio time. Halo Flies, possibly because of the 8.5 minute format, did not get a lot of aired. But apparently very big in Denmark. In interviews, I also, yeah, people in Denmark love Halo of Flies. Written by the whole band.
I think it's interesting. I agree with you. This isn't my favorite Alice Cooper song ever, but it is up there. It's in my like top couple Alice Cooper songs, group or, you know, the later solo stuff. It's certainly my favorite on this record. Also, I realized re-listening to this album, I kind of ripped off this song years ago and never realized it till now.
There's a lot of range in this song. So there's what kind of portion was it? Was it
So you know the guitars in the beginning that have that sort of like fly buzzing sort of effect, yep, in the beginning? I 100% stole that on a song years ago and did not realize it until just now. And it's weird because I've heard this song since then, never put it together until I was really analyzing the album to get ready for this show. And I was like, holy shit, I fucking stole that. And it was not a conscious thing. That's just how much, I guess, Alice has influenced me being a fan, that I did not even put together until I had to sort of objectively listen to an album that I blatantly stole something off of it.
Good choice. there's a lot, but this is good. I think the drum portion of Billion Dollar Babies also worth stealing at some point. If you want to, looking for other little tidbits, I'd recommend that. Expansive song, 8.5 minutes long. Huge instrumental section to begin with that builds with initially this as stolen by Mike Blinsky. kind of sinewy guitar, fly, buzzing kind of thing. Tremendous live. What is fairly interesting is that a lot of times Alice will actually conduct the band. He will with batons. He will be conducting the band through this front instrumental section, which is about the first 2.5-3 minutes of the song.
Yeah, I was going to say, the opening is basically song length in and of itself.
Yeah, and it's good. And it gives a lot of good guitar work, as Mike can tell you. And so a lot of things go on there. And then they cut into the storyline of the song, which is a fun storyline. A little bit of, so there is a reference, there is a, I should say, I guess an homage in this song to a musical. Do you happen to recall what that is?
So it's funny that you say that, because when I was listening to it to get ready for this, I noticed it, and it is bugging the shit out of me that I can't remember what it is.
Well, as you might expect, you would expect to see a lot of references to Sound of Music in Alice Cooper albums. I mean, of course you would, right?
Obviously. So,
Halo of Flies, ultimately a story, kind of secret agent, lots of things going on with the secret agent, and he's kind of listing all the, he's got a watch that turns into a lifeboat and all these different things, but there's a little section where he goes, daggers and contracts and bright shiny limos, I've got a watch that turns into a lifeboat. So it that whole section is the whole kind of favorite things, kind of, because it's the cadence of it when he talks about daggers and contracts. So it was kind of cute, I thought. Nice little nugget in there for you.
Absolutely. Now, are you a Sound of Music fan?
No, I'm not.
But neither am I.
I can appreciate them working it in.
See, I don't feel as bad now, though, thinking about it. Like, I stole from them, but they stole some Sound of Music. That's so right. It all kind of works out.
Yeah, it's even. It's. I think it was payback.
Right. I was getting them back for the Sound of Music.
That's right.
You don't fuck with the Sound of Music on my watch.
This is what happens. Goes around, comes around, Cooper. So we get the kind of meat of the story, and then we get to another very kind of large instrumental section at the end, which includes some heavily featured drum work, which is, again, excellent. Neil Smith does a fantastic job. And this is what I wanted to kind of mention. So this had always been kind of my favorite song, but then what locked it in for me forever is seeing it live a couple times and some amazing, and the one was during the Dragontown tour. This is, you got Ryan Roxy as the lead, get the main guitarist. Eric Dover is kind of second chair on guitars. And so they go through the section. When they get to the tail end of Halo Flies on this part, it gets into basically some bass and drum activity. And so they get to that section, and Chuck Garrick's just doing the Chuck Garrick thing. He's awesome playing the bass, interplay with the drummer. But what they did is, as they were going to this section, all of a sudden I noticed kind of roadies came in from either side, and they set up two additional drum kits on either side of the main drum kit. And Dover got up on one side, and Ryan Roxy got up on the other side. And when you get to the section where you get this kind of bump, 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 bump stuff going on, they were kind of going back and forth with the drummer, who was Eric Singer from Kiss for that tour. And so Eric's clobbering it. They're kind of counterpointing it. They're on both sides. And then all three of them start going in, and it was heaven. It was so awesome.
Now, in general, are you a fan of long songs?
If it's a good song, yeah. I mean, and if it kind of takes advantage of its length to take you a couple different places, it depends on the quality of the song. This, I could listen to Halo Flies forever. It could be another 4 minutes long if they kept doing what they were doing with progression. Black Blade by Blue Oyster Cult's another one that has some length to it, but they move some stuff around on it kind of in a fun way too. So how about you?
Overall, I would say, yeah, I like longer songs. As long as it, like you said, it kind of has to do something. Now, ambient music is a little bit different. I'm not really including that because that is meant to sort of have a repetitive droning element to it at times. But for a more traditional rock band type situation, I love long songs as long as it goes somewhere and isn't just repetitive for the sake of being long.
Without a doubt, favorite song on an album. And I would say favorite song live, particularly if you got Ryan Roxy and Eric Dover clobbering drums side by side.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds awesome.
That's pretty amazing. I was actually surprised, spoiler, folks, for songs coming later in the discussion. Woman of Mass Distraction also is pretty outstanding live. Very awesome. I mean, Alice is tremendous to listen to live, but there are a couple songs that stand out. And Woman of Mass Distraction and Halo of Flies are the two for me. And Halo of Flies is just the crown jewel.
It is a great song.
Yeah. Yeah, it's shifted now to where, so there's still the drum stuff, but Chuck Garrick now actually takes over a section of this, and he'll come out doing the bass line, and then he does kind of a crowd interaction thing. And there's a couple clips on my YouTube channel of Chuck in the audience participation during Halo of Flies. I'll include the link too, so you can see. It's pretty fun too. Chuck's got a very nice stage presence. He's a good guy. All right. Anything else on Halo Flies from you?
No, that's it.
Okay, Desperado. Desperado was written by Alice and Michael Bruce. And this is Alice singing like Jim Morrison, basically.
Yes.
Pretty well. And I'd say it's a Doors-esque song, really. I mean, with a little more punch, because
right,
a couple extra guitars to work with. And,
yeah, it is almost like the Alice Cooper group covering the Doors, but an original song.
I mentioned earlier the kind of clever lyrics. You're a notch and I'm a legend is when you hear it in the song sounds better than me just stumbling through the words there, but that's some nice little word crafting there. It is door sounding. Alice can do a very, very serviceable Jim Morrison. He can also do a very serviceable John Lennon. We'll find out later. Anything else on Desperado?
I really enjoy the live version of it on Fistful of Alice.
Yes. Yes, that is excellent.
I might actually prefer it to the studio version. Not to take anything away from the Alice Cooper group. It's just a little bit heavier, a little bit more of an edge to it in that live version.
Yeah, and I'd agree, and there's some punchy vocals to it, and Alice, God bless him, can still kind of crank it out on stage really well. Can scream sing with the best of them.
I would say it was that live version that really, I'd obviously heard Killer many times before, but Desperado never really stuck out that much to me the way it did after I started getting into it more from that live version.
Yeah, that the Fistful of Alice is just, there's not a bad live track on that album.
No, that's really an excellent album, and we should do one of these for that album.
Yep, I think. Yeah, I'm trying to figure out which ones are borderline. So that what we can kind of figure out when we get there is, I don't know what the box set conversation. I guess we could talk about a few because the Monster Dog songs are on the box set. So we,
right.
And so we will have to figure that out. But I think, you know, like greatest hits. I don't know if we'll do a full show on greatest hits or not. But I think we've got to do Fistful of Alice because I think we need to do any of his live ones. Fistful of Alice was a much better outing than his first live work, which will be coming up here in a little bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love Fistful of Alice. And that was one where I had never really warmed to Feed My Frankenstein, but the version that on Fistful of Alice includes Rob Zombie. He joins Alice for the song, and who co-wrote Feed My Frankenstein with Alice. And I like the Fistful of Alice version quite a bit, so it got me warming to Feed My Frankenstein a little bit more.
There's a few songs on there that gave me a better appreciation for the songs. A song like Desperado that just didn't stand out to me as much, or in the case of a song like Poison that I didn't really like the studio version of it, and then really got an appreciation for it from that live version of the song.
Lost in America is another good. So we're kind of reviewing Fistful of Alice here. More to come. You're going to hear some of these comments again later, folks. But yeah, there's a ton of stuff on there. So to make up a little time on there, I am going to propose while they are two different songs, I think for me, I've always kind of grouped them together. You Drive Me. So we go to the second for those of you who are of the vinyl persuasion, we would have flipped the album at this point in time. First two songs on side two are You Drive Me Nervous. And Yeah, Yeah, Yeah. While, like I said, they're different songs, they feel connected to me in the kind of the music styling. Part of the way they feel connected to me is they're my two least favorite songs on this album.
Yeah, I would agree with everything that you just said about them. I really don't have a whole lot to say about them other than that. Like, they do kind of work together at not being the best songs on the album.
Yeah, I mean, and they're fun, they're good. They got nice little moments in them, but when you got Under My Wheels, you got Halo of Flies, and Desperado hanging in the neighborhood, it's kind of tough to be the cool kid. So these are solid. They're nice. They're fun. And on my recovery tour on Alice Mentions, this is where I got confused. So we had the whole Ask Me Why the Singer's Name is Alice and Be My Lover, and then in Yeah, 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 there's a mention of This is Alice Speaking Suffer. So keeping our Alice reference count, there's two references to Alice on this album, more to come. So now the next two songs kind of go together too, but in a different way, much better way, and that is Dead Babies and Killer, the title track and the little ditty called Dead Babies. So talk to me, Mike, about your thoughts on Dead Babies, the song.
Actually, I was kind of hoping you would go first on that one. I want to hear the Kelly Tool perspective.
So we will get to the point. So Alice, when Alice goes solo, gets much more from a concept album. Several of his initial works, Welcome to My Nightmare, Alice Cooper Goes to Hell, even really Lace and Whiskey, and From the Inside, they're thematically tied. They're not necessarily like a musical and a story, but these songs all were working towards the same end.
Yeah, there's definitely a narrative thread that you could follow.
And Killer is the first time the Alice Cooper group starts to go down this road, where ultimately the album's name's Killer. If you kind of look at the songs that are going through, there's either death or problems or difficulties in about every song. So there's a little bit of bad guy stuff going on, and that's a little bit of the thematic that runs through Killer. It's gonna tighten up a little bit more as we go further along. So within an album called Killer, you have Dead Babies, where some of this is feeding into the stage show. Bad Alice, he's a bad guy. Ultimately, the story of Dead Babies is about parental neglect, and that's how little Betty is no longer with us. But I enjoy the song. I know that it's a bit on the provocative side in terms of a title, and say, oh yeah, Dead Babies, that's a fun song. But it's good music, certainly built for a stage presence and some things going on there. I enjoy it, but to a large degree, what I probably like the best about it is its transition into Killer and that kind of process there that I thought was just kind of, I enjoyed quite a bit. So I like the song. I don't think it does, I don't want to say it was done for cheap shock value, but it does seem like this one's a little more transparently about, hey, we're kind of controversial versus the rest. So much of the other parts of this album are just like really, really, really strong. I think this is a solid song musically. I think I kind of get where they're going with the storyline. So I like it. It's significantly better than You Drive Me Nervous and Yeah, Yeah, Yeah. So kind of pulls this side up from there. But it's no Halo of Flies. So that's where I'm at.
Yeah, I agree. I like the transition into Killer a lot. The song, like you said, it's not a cheap shock value ploy or anything like that. But at the same time, like, there is a sort of, a knowing thing when you call a song something like Dead Babies that you are trying to elicit a response from people just based on the title. I mean, they could have gone a lot further if they were just solely interested in shock value, and they didn't, but they're definitely trying to get some sort of, to bring that full circle again back to Wasp. There was an album by Wasp when they reunited with that guitar player from the documentary. He had been out of the band for a while. They reunited with him to make an album called Kill, Fuck, Die, which, as you can get from the title, was definitely meant for shock value. The album, in fact, is not even all that particularly explicit or shocking. And the initial pressings of that album, it came in sort of this cardboard digipack case, and on the cover is a refrigerator, and on the initial pressings, it was this extra thick cardboard, and you could open up the refrigerator, and there were dead babies inside of the refrigerator.
Yeah, so they were going for an emotion there.
right. So it's not like that, like a desperate might not be the right word. I actually do like that record, Kill, Fuck, Die, but it's an obvious ploy for shock value. So is this, but to a way lesser degree.
As it winds down, we roll into Killer, and get all kinds of interesting things with Killer. It's great lyrics, very interesting keyboard work, kind of organ work going on at different portions of it. Some really fun stuff there. And it's all building towards, this album's been Killer. We've had many circumstances of bad things happening throughout the album. And in true Alice fashion, it's kind of crime and punishment. And this will be a theme that will continue on from a stage show perspective to this very day. And so you have a big chunk of the concert where Alice is not a very good person. So there must be consequences. And the consequences for the Killer tour was that Alice was hung. And we get to experience the hanging in an audio fashion, kind of a podcast of the hanging. takes us right all the way up until you get the actual sound effect of the trapdoor dropping. Then it kind of, I guess, a return to Priest for you. This is a very, very strange music at the end, which I'm assuming is the soundtrack that goes through your head if you're hung, but I'm not directly familiar. So I think it's a nice, fun, strong ending to it.
Yeah, it's a good ending. I like the whole dramatic, theatrical element to it. It's not certainly not my favorite song on the album. I mean, that would be Halo of Lies and Under My Wheels, but I mean, it's probably right below those two for me.
I would argue, so for Love It to Death, the album did open up. So it was a single album, but it was kind of in a double album sleeve. So you would open the album up. On the cover, they had the band in black and white. We talked about that on the Love It to Death show. You open up the Love It to Death album, and it's the first version of the Alice Cooper eye makeup, which is more kind of spidery. There's mascara around the eyes and kind of rays emanating, spider legs kind of emanating from the eyes that he would use on occasion before he moved to the more traditional makeup that we see him in quite a bit. But this is the first album, and they used to work with a group called Pacific Eye and Ear. And it was a design company of some sort, and they came up with some pretty remarkable and fun things, which we'll talk about with several of the albums coming up. So this is the first one where they started to push it, I think, a little bit to kind of add a little bit more. They're going to get a lot more creative in future albums, but for this one, Killer is not only an album, Killer is an album and a calendar, because you'd be able to open it up and flip it up, and you'd have kind of a full-length calendar. A lovely picture of a hung Alice Cooper. Now, do you have the vinyl of this one, Mike?
No, I don't. This is one that I actually, like, unlike Love It to Death, which I originally heard on vinyl, this was one my dad had lost his vinyl of and had a CD of. So this is one I listened to on CD.
Well, we'll include in the blog post a picture of the calendar, because it's pretty cool. I couldn't bring myself, because you would have had to somewhat destroy the album to actually remove the calendar and put it up on your wall. I was tempted to do that, but I've kind of kept it intact. But we'll get a picture so folks can see, if they're not familiar with it, what it is. In the autobiography, Me, Alice, there's a fairly unpleasant story about this. I found it a little unpleasant, so Alice was starting to build a lot of fans up. The group was starting to build a lot of fans up, and an individual wrote into Alice and said, you know, it started with Love It to Death. They did include fan club information. This is for email kids. This is before the Snapchat. This is before all of that, where you could actually mail things and you could join a fan club and mail things. But this gentleman was really taken by Alice, the picture of Alice on the calendar, to the extent that it aroused him, to the extent that it required him to address that arousal. And he included in his letter to Alice proof of that. So in a baggie or some sort of Ziploc or something like that. That's a nice piece of mail to get.
Yeah, I mean, I would hope the postal screening process is a little bit more thorough these days, that bodily fluids aren't making it through.
I one can only hope. So, and for the record, no matter how much you enjoy Squat Cobbler, Mike and I are not interested in having any bodily fluids mailed to it. Well, I should only speak for myself.
No, it's okay. In this instance, it is perfectly fine for you to speak for both of us.
As tempting as it might be to send us some bodily fluid, please don't.
Bitcoin? Or at least send us a picture first so we can decide whether or not we want your bodily fluids.
That's fair. Yeah, we'll have an evaluation process. So.
It's like a screening.
Excellent. So now we come to the point where we need to rank this bad boy. It's been pretty easy for us so far. We're staying exactly the same, and that listing so far for both Mike and I is bottom of the pile, Pretty's for You, in second place, Easy Action, and occupying this top spot, Love It to Death. I think this is the last time it's a slam dunk to know where things slot. From here on out, we're going to start to see maybe some differences. But, Mike, where would you place Killer?
This would be number two for me.
Keeping it easy on the graphic for me, because it's same for me. So we will stay with Killer is number two for me. I had originally, when we got this started off, and Mike had made it kind of clear from the beginning, hey, just so you know, Love It to Death, that's my favorite album. It's going to stay number one. and was kind of querying whether that would be my case. And I was like, I don't know. And one of the candidates I had originally thought might be able to nudge it out was Killer. But kind of after going through both of them together, love it to death. I mean, I think the point you made when we did that show is still really profound, that When I'm 18 is the quote unquote weakest track on an album, you've got a pretty good album. So
yeah.
And while Killer's awesome, and if you're getting Alice Cooper albums, I would put it towards the top of the list of ones to get, because you do get the very cool ending with Killer. You get Be My Lover, you get Under My Wheels, and you get Halo of Flies, which is just so good. So there's a lot of greatness on it. So it's definitely should be on your short list. It doesn't perform as consistently as Love It to Death. So once I had a chance to really kind of look back through this album and think about it, it's not even close. It's a good solid number two. I enjoy it quite a bit, but it did not threaten Love It to Death to any degree at all.
Because Love It to Death is the best Alice Cooper record.
That's what I've heard since so far. I'm going to continue to reflect. There's a few other ones out there that might make the case for, but sure.
I think we're really going to see deviation as we get into the Alice solo records.
Yeah.
I think that's where it's really going to start to shake up.
Yeah. Yeah. Because there's a couple of them that I enjoy quite a bit that a lot of other people don't. So there'll be some, I don't know if there's anything, you know, well, we'll see. There's such a diversity coming our way when we get into the solo side too. Not that there's not diversity here, but we got a lot of stuff to get through, and we've got through four of them. So with that, I think we're going to wrap it up for Squat Cobbler number 11, and we will be back. The next Squat Cobbler will be back probably in recommendation format, and then we'll be talking a little more Alice again. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you, guys.
You have a choice. You can turn me off.
I love the Monster Dog songs.